WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic.
AP News, I'm Ben Thomas. The government has upgraded its estimate of third quarter economic growth. Sagar Magani has a look.
The first estimate was that GDP rose at a 2.3.
Every kind of food in our grocery stores, as well as shortages of all kinds of products in retail stores.
Michelle Fischbach, Republican of Minnesota.
Our country's economy can't handle a strike that reports would say would cost $2 billion a day.
The result?
The yeas are 290, the nays are 137. The joint resolution is passed.
The bill would bind rail companies and workers to a deal struck in September that was voted down by four of the 12 unions involved. A second look at third quarter economic growth produced an upgrade. The Commerce Department reports the gross domestic product grew at a 2.9% annual rate from July through September. And Rita Foley has some new numbers on jobs.
Employers posted 10.3 million job openings in October, down slightly from September, says the Labor Department. But it's still a lot of available jobs. Fewer people quit their jobs in October, 4 million, down from 4.1 million. While more available jobs is a benefit for those looking for work, the Fed would like to see the number of job openings fall as it battles inflation.
Fed Chair Jerome Powell says the central bank will push interest rates higher than previously expected and keep them there longer to fight inflation. But he also indicates policymakers could slow the pace of those hikes at its December meeting. That sparked a rally on Wall Street. The Dow gained more than 2%, the S&P more than 3%, and the NASDAQ 4.4%. And global markets rose on news that China is launching a campaign to vaccinate older Chinese against COVID-19. That sparked hopes it might ease the severe antivirus controls under its zero COVID policy. And the EU is warning Elon Musk Twitter needs to strengthen measures to protect users from hate speech, misinformation, and other harmful content. This is AP News.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life, filled with dance, art, music, and knowledge. They dream of a brighter future with enough nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, escape poverty, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, such dreams are coming true. Together, we give children a chance to set their sights high and succeed in school and in life by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and so much more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today. Together, we can help end poverty for good.
Hi, it's Don Brown, host of This Week in Waukesha, inviting you to catch our coverage of this year's 2022 Waukesha Christmas Parade, Sunday, December 4th. The coverage starts at 3, the parade starts at 4. We'll be live in front of the Walk Radio studios talking to the marchers, the participants, the fans, and all the people that make this parade in this community a very special place. Waukesha Christmas Parade, covered here on Walk Radio 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio, VO5.
Let's do it on the dance floor. Let's do it. I'll begin. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
Here's today's STEM tip. Don't throw out that old plastic bottle. Repurpose it by turning it into an awesome terrarium. Just fill it with sand, pebbles, soil, and your favorite plant. It'll grow sealed right in its own ecosystem. Learn more at SheCanSTEM. A message from the Ad Council.
I asked what kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
I'm just texting him back.
I'm just posting a story.
I'm just changing the song.
I'm just...
No. When it comes to distracted driving, just don't. Sending a text takes your eyes off the road for just 5 seconds, but in that time, your car can travel the length of an entire football field. Any distracted driving just isn't worth it.
Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. Waukesha County Judge Jennifer Darrow became famous in Wisconsin for presiding over the Darrell Brooks trial. Today, she announces she's running for Wisconsin Supreme Court. The election is expected to determine the court's ideological majority. Darrow was appointed by former Governor Scott Walker and is reportedly active in the Republican Party. Flu cases in southern Wisconsin quadrupled in November. UW Health says it had 422 positive flu cases last week alone, more than any other number all last flu season. People are gathering more than they have in almost 3 years. State health officials are encouraging people to get their flu shots, stay home when sick, and wash hands frequently. In sports, the Bucks are at the Knicks tonight. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Miss a minute.
Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Well, the House passed legislation to avert a strike of railroad workers. And can I just say this to start? Democrats suck at messaging. This is a major screw up in my view of epic proportions. This is one of those moments where, you know, Joe Biden, the most pro-labor president in the history of the country, in my view, and I still think he is, I think messaging-wise handled this poorly. Now, the House has done what the president asked. They have passed legislation to avert a nationwide strike. These workers cannot, as a matter of law, go on strike. And that has everything to do with our screwed up labor laws. The fact that the Railway Labor Act takes their right to strike away. We have seen this in the past. The last time a strike was crushed like this, or the potential of a strike, was back during the George H.W. Bush years, when H.W. Bush back then said, no, we're not going to allow you to strike. And the workers took it on the chin. Look, every time, this is where the frustration is. And look, I felt the frustration all day today as union members are expressing their dismay, their anger, their frustration. Because this is another one of those moments where it appears from the outside, and this is all into the messaging, it appears from the outside that Biden has sided with big corporations, has sided with the rail barons, and that these workers are getting screwed. And the reality is, on this front, the fact that they don't have sick days, that is a screw job. Now, the message out of this was simple, I believe. And I think Bernie Sanders and others are saying, look, you know, we need sick days. I think the message out of this is every worker should have sick days. Everyone. This should be a rallying cry for a movement of people to say, you know what? They're right. Every worker should have time off to spend with their family. Every worker should have the opportunity to see their kids, especially when they're sick. Now, the legislation that was passed today, the one mandating that workers do not strike and forcing them to accept this contract as is, passed 290 to 137. I believe 8 Democrats voted against that bill, 129 Republicans. Again, the messaging in that Republicans voted for workers. That's the message the right is going to play. 129 Republicans stood up for working people. When the reality is this was what Republicans were always going to do. It's just now opportunism. Now, there was a second piece of legislation that was passed to partner with this that would have ensured 7 paid sick days for rail employees. Now, this is what should have happened. Biden should have said, get me a bill that gives them the 4 sick days that they want, and I will sign it tomorrow, and we will be done with this, and the workers will get what they want, the employer will get what they want, and we will move forward. No economic catastrophe, no end of the world, no falling sky, none of that. Simple. Now, that vote was 221 to 207, basically along party lines. But again, Democrats suck at messaging. So the messaging tomorrow is going to be Republicans stood up for working people. And the reality is, as I said, the simple way to avert a strike, give the workers the sick time that they earn. This is the reality of the moment. Give them what they've earned. When I tell you how much profit these rail barons have pocketed, it's going to be staggering. Last year alone, they pocketed profit. This is not operating ratio. This is profit. This is money in the pocket. $23 billion last year. In the first 3 quarters of this year, they're at $21.2 billion profit. They have never been more, well, maybe back in the 1880s, they were more profitable. And you wonder why inflation is through the roof. You wonder why families are struggling. But no, this is all the workers' fault. If the workers went on strike, it was going to be a catastrophe. It was going to be the end of the world. They're asking for 4 sick days. That's it. That's all. And by asking for that, what has corporate America done? Well, run to Congress to force this bill, this contract down these workers' throats without, of course, any sick time. And it's not even, this is the weird part. It's not even like you go, it has to be paid. They just want time off. They just want time to spend with their families. Now, what has corporate America done? They've scared the you-know-what out of everybody. You know, if these workers go on strike and they demand those sick days, it's the end of the economy. And understand, when this game of chicken is played, corporate America knows that they hold all the cards. Because, well, you know, as much as Biden is a pro-labor president, he's not going to allow 750,000 workers to be off the job. He's not going to allow our supply chain, which is still struggling to catch up, to come to a screeching halt. It's not going to happen. And I said this months ago. There's not going to be a strike because they won't allow it. But here's the problem I have. If you're not going to allow a strike to happen, then you've got to make sure that there is sick time to people. You got to make sure that they get what they need. Now, the other part of this I love that corporate America is saying, well, you know, we can't shut things down because we can't give them this stuff because they're essential. We need them. They're essential workers. If they were to go on strike, they would be this cataclysmic failure of epic proportions. It'd be the sky would fall. So the serious question that pops into my mind, if these workers are so damn important, then why don't you give them sick time? Why don't you give them time off when they're sick to be well, to be mentally in the right space, if they're that important? And it's not like the railroad companies are complaining that they can't afford it. No, they're not complaining about that at all. They know they can afford it. They just don't want to. It was pointed out that seven sick days. Now, they want 4. It was pointed out that 7 sick days would cost the railroad industry about $321 million. 15 paid days a year would cost about $688 million a year. Now, remember what I told you a minute ago. Last year, they made $23 billion worth of profit. This year, $21.2 in the first 3 quarters. And that's $1 billion. It would only cost $688 million to get to 15. Again, they're asking for 4. Warren Buffett, who owns BNSF, one of the nation's largest railroad companies, just last week had a day where his net worth went up $1.4 billion. One day. That's enough to pay for paid sick day, 15 days, what, paid sick days for a week, for what, 4 years? Just one day. That's all. Now, the thing that bothers me is if we were, I don't know, a country that valued workers, if we were a country, oh, I don't know, that had sane, rational labor laws, that cared about family values the way because Republicans tell us how much they're the party of family values. Where is their legislation to go, no, every worker should have paid time to get well, to heal, to spend time with family? Where are our family values, people? Because here's where the uprising should come. The uprising shouldn't be against Joe Biden, because that's where all of the attention is right now. How could Biden do this? How could the Democrats do this? They weren't going to allow the economy to collapse. They weren't going to take that. Republicans would be thrilled if that were to happen. But this is the moment where we've got to turn the frame a little bit. And the frame being turned is we should be pushing legislation to ensure that every working person use this as the poster child, if you will, because the railroad workers aren't the only ones who don't get paid time off. Every worker should have paid time off. Every worker should have time to spend with their family. But these guys, these women, these railroad engineers, on call 24/7, 365, at the behest of corporate America, always waiting for the phone to ring, always waiting. This is, I'll tell you, it's crazy. And this is why I keep coming back to, we need politicians who are going to stand up against corporate America. We need politicians who are going to stand up to fight for labor law reform. We need politicians who are going to make sure that working families get a fair shake. And that's why I'm in Georgia, fighting to get Raphael Warnock back in the Senate. Quick break, right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1854. That was the day that Mary McDowell, known as the Angel of the Chicago Stockyards, was born. Mary's father brought the family to Chicago from Cincinnati after the Civil War. Her family was friends with U.S. President Rutherford B. Hayes, and as a young woman, she spent a month in the White House as a guest. Mary received her college degree and worked as a teacher for a wealthy family in New York. But living and working among the wealthy was not to be the course of her life. She returned to Chicago and became a kindergarten teacher at the famed Hull House. She then became the head of the University of Chicago Settlement House in the back of the yards. The Settlement House served the diverse neighborhoods around the Chicago stockyards. The community center included a library, play lots, gymnasiums, and classrooms. Mary and her Settlement House supported the rights of workers to form unions and to have safe working conditions. In 1903, Mary became the head of the Illinois chapter of the National Women's Trade Union League. The Pittsburgh Press reported on an incident that captured the spirit of Mary McDowell. The city of Chicago had a practice of using garbage to fill holes in the streets surrounding the stockyards. Mary showed up at the mayor's office with a group of women from the neighborhood and demanded, quote, "All right, we want the rest of it dumped on Lakeshore Drive. If it's good enough for the stockyards, it's good enough for the drive, too." As a result, the city stopped using garbage to repair the streets. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Why does this matter? The Democrats have already controlled the Senate. You go, no, you need that extra vote. We need, especially now more than ever, need that extra vote. And look, the reality is I think Raphael Warnock is a good man. I think he's a much better human being than Herschel Walker. So to me, this is almost a no-brainer. I mean, policy aside, just, you know, I just look at Raphael Warnock as a decent human being.
And he is. He's a very decent human being. He's somebody that I've known personally for 15, 20 years as the pastor of Ebenezer, Dr. King's Church. I knew him both at my time at the Atlanta Labor Council and now at the state Fed. And we were excited. It took a lot of people's voices to get him to run for office to start with. And I think Stacey Abrams probably deserves a lot of credit for getting him to run the first time. But once he got in there, he's proven that he supports working families. He's proven that he cares about the middle class and the working class folks. And, you know, he's led the way on a number of issues. And just starting with the healthcare issue of capping insulin at $35. He wrote that stuff, and he drove that bill. So he stood with the labor movement on pensions and helped helped our pensions survive. So Senator Warnock's a good, decent man, a good friend, and we're excited and happy to be working very hard for him. And we are working very hard here in Georgia.
No, I've been talking to union members, you know, across the state, and the story that I get is there's a sense of excitement that this guy is going to carry their message and their hopes and their dreams and their wants into the Senate that he understands. And this is, for me, this is one of those important candidates who I think truly does get it. So when we're out talking to union members, and I've been spending the last couple of days here in Georgia doing that, you know, being able to say, yeah, he did exactly what you said. He helped save multi-employer pension funds, of which all of these folks, you know, were keenly aware. He's going to help, I hope, in the future, ensure that workers have the right to organize, have an ability to organize, streamline a process to get people to be able to join and form unions by passing something like the PRO Act. There's so much here that there's so much fertile ground for working people to hold on to, I think.
Absolutely. And you said it, Rick, just a few minutes ago. The difference is crystal clear. Herschel Walker, he was a hell of a football player. I'm one of the greatest football players I've ever seen in college. And
yeah.
I was in my 20s when he was starring at the University of Georgia. And, you know, he can play football. But, you know, unfortunately, he's got a history and a past. And it's not very good. You know, he's quite honestly, he's threatened wives. He's beaten wives. He lies all the time. He's just not qualified to be a U.S. senator. And, you know, and I think that's going to bear out on December 6th. Yeah,
No, I'm with you. But here's the thing. And this is where, you know, all of the bad things aside, you know, and then look, he's done horrible things. I saw one woman with a sign that says, do I have to be Herschel Walker's girlfriend to get an abortion, since there's so much of that in his past? My problem also is the policies that he doesn't have. We've heard all about these werewolves and, you know, all kinds of weird, bizarre stories of being an FBI agent, but we haven't heard about what he wants to do, especially for working people. Now, I got to assume he's going to fall into line with Mitch McConnell and the other Republicans, who I've been saying for the longest time hate working people. I got to assume he's just going to be a rubber stamp vote for McConnell and whatever the Republican leadership wants.
Yeah, that, definitely. And that's the only reason they're holding their noses and are supporting him is the fact that they know he will be a solid vote. But let's be clear. He doesn't support our right to organize. He doesn't support raising the minimum wage or people making a livable wage. He doesn't care whether or not workers have health care. Everything we stand for, he really doesn't care. And yeah. It's clear he said it. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think that's what's going to get him.
No, I sure hope so. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Charlie Fleming. Charlie is the president of the Georgia AFL-CIO. We'll get links out on social media how you can check a look at their website. But here's the thing, Charlie, and this is where, you know, just the big news right now is the president came out and, you know, sadly, I'm not going to beat up on the president for coming out on this rail situation. For me, this whole situation hinges on the fact that we've got such bad labor law, that the Railway Labor Act is such a bad piece of legislation that is not favorable to working people. It's written for the railroad barons. For me, someone like Warnock in the Senate, I want to see him put forth a piece of legislation to undo this, to make sure that workers have rights and that Congress can't come in and just, you know, impose something on them. I'm curious your thoughts on this whole situation. But more importantly, the fact that we need major comprehensive labor law reform.
Absolutely. Well, I would on this situation, on the rail situation, I'm not very that close to it. I mean, I do know that there's been a number of unions that supported the agreement. I guess there's, what, three that have said, no, we're not. But from what I understand, there's a lot of good things in that bill. in that contract. But there's also some things that obviously three of the unions said, no, we're just not going to do it. And but I will say this. I came up through the Railroad Labor Act. I spent 35 years in the airline industry. So there was times when we pushed to try to get that act changed. But you have to be careful because sometimes you there's some things of that act that will help you in situations in negotiations with companies. They won't be able to just enact some things.
Okay, help me with that. Help me through that. What is positive about the RLA?
Well, I would say that the one of the biggest things is they just can't they can't lock you out without going through the process. I mean, you have to go through as long as the economy is going to be affected. Clinton stepped in on some airline. I'm trying to forget which airline it was, but he stepped in and when was either United or American that was going to go out back in when he was in office, he stepped in and made them go back to the bargaining table. I just think that for the most part, yes, I totally agree that we need labor law reform and the most of the parts of the Railroad Act is probably not positive, but it can cut both ways. And I just say that, it's cumbersome. It drags things out. It probably does favor the companies more than because they know we will not be able to just walk out because the president will step in.
No, no, and this has been the learned behavior, which is why the railroad companies are going, no, this is what you're getting, and you're not getting anything more. And because this is the part that gets me. I'm struggling with the fact that you have these workers who have no personal time. There's no sick time here. If you get sick, there's no time for you. If your kids get sick, there's no time for you. And I'm hoping that Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats do move on something to ensure that in this contract there will be sick days. And maybe here's an even better idea. Maybe we make sure that every working person in this country gets sick days. Maybe this is that beginning of that conversation that says every working person should have that kind of security.
Absolutely. Everybody deserves to be able to take care of their families if they work full time. There's no doubt about that. And I actually had thought that there was some sick leave built into the new contract.
There wasn't, and that's why where we are. For these engineers, there's nothing. And the sad reality is, and we've talked to the unions who represent these people. They're on call 24/7, 365. Their lives are not their own. If they get sick, there's no making a doctor appointment. That's why these sick days were so vital. And I'm still hoping, I'm not going to beat the president up too much, but in this moment, I'm struggling. Because this is the reason I bring this up, Charlie. Because, our president is, in my view, still the most pro-union president that we've had in my lifetime, at least. The message now is, in days before this runoff election is, well, now not so much. And the Republicans are jumping on this, saying, we're going to stand with these workers. And this, for me, is that moment for Democrats to stand up and say, no, we support these workers.
Well, I think all of our members need to do is think about 4 years ago when Trump said he was going to do all this stuff. The Republicans have made their bed. They have never supported workers. And they don't intend to support workers. They'll talk a good game like Trump did 4 years ago and then won't do a dang thing for workers. Yeah. And that's why Joe Biden has been seen the way he has, because he come in and he's done things to help workers.
Yeah. So last question I've got for you. What's the message from now to Election Day for everybody out there?
Well, we're just telling people to go vote. Early voting is up. We got had a record day yesterday here. Had over 300,000 people vote first day of early voting, or actually the first day of the last week, because there was some that was done over the weekend. But the numbers are up. I just would encourage everybody to go vote. It's critically important who we have representing us in this state, and it certainly shouldn't be Herschel Walker.
There you go. Charlie Fleming, I appreciate the time. Get out there, knock on the doors, and keep up the great work.
Well, thank you again. We appreciate you having us on and appreciate you helping educate our members. Thanks,
good,
Rick.
Good stuff. Charlie Fleming, president of the Georgia AFL-CIO. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick, at the Rick Smith Show.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Capitol Riot, I'm Ben Thomas with an AP News Minute. The House January 6th committee has interviewed the Republican Speaker of the Wisconsin Assembly, Robin Voss. The panel chair says he'll be the last witness. And Ed Donahue looks at the impact of the seditious conspiracy convictions of two leaders of the Oath Keepers.
Attorney General Merrick Garland praised the work of prosecutors.
As the verdict of this case makes clear, the department will work tirelessly to hold accountable those responsible for crimes related to the attack on our democracy on January 6th. 2021.
Democrats are calling for charges to be brought against former President Trump. Garland was asked about the work of the House committee investigating the riot.
We are asking for access to all of the transcripts, and that's really all I can say right now.
Meantime, a second group of Oath Keepers faces trial, as well as former Proud Boys National Chairman Enrique Tarrio and other top leaders for seditious conspiracy. Ed Donahue, Washington.
And I'm Ben Thomas.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life, filled with dance, art, music, and knowledge. They dream of a brighter future with enough nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, escape poverty, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, such dreams are coming true. Together, we give children a chance to set their sights high and succeed in school and in life by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and so much more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today. Together, we can help end poverty for good.
WAUK will be broadcasting the Waukesha Christmas Parade live, and you can become a sponsor. Call us at 262-232-8164. Sponsorship includes an on-air interview during the live broadcast of the Christmas Parade. A portion of the proceeds goes directly to the Waukesha Memorial Fund. Please call at 262-232-8164. That's 262-232-8164.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnier with your headlines. The Respect for Marriage Act has passed the Senate by a 61-36 vote and now moves on to the House. It is expected to pass quickly and then head to the executive desk, where President Biden has pledged to sign it into law. The measure requires all states to recognize same-sex and interracial marriages performed in any other state. It does not require states to allow these marriages to be performed or require nonprofit religious groups to perform a same-sex marriage. However, it does protect marriage equality in a way that once signed into law could not be overturned by the Supreme Court, in the same way they decided access to abortion was not a constitutional right when they overturned Roe v. Wade. Wisconsin U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, a lead sponsor of the legislation. Wisconsin's GOP Senator Ron Johnson voted against. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
About that, nothing presidential either.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, wow, have I been taking... It's weird, because I've been taking this beating over Biden's announcement that he wants Congress to act. And look, I've been defending him, and rightly so. Look, I think he's been doing the right things on infrastructure. I think he's been doing the right things on manufacturing. I think he's been doing a lot of the right stuff. This is a bad one. This is not good in my view, and which is why I've asked our good friend David Dayan to come talk with us, share some thoughts. He's the executive editor over at the American Prospect. Prospect.org is their website. David, thanks for taking time for us.
Absolutely. Thanks, Rick.
So I'm looking at this situation that we're in, and the sad reality is, like I said, I defended Biden. You know, I'm all on board. I want to make sure that we get the best deal we can get, that workers don't get cheated. Biden's the most pro-labor president in the history of the country. Why this? Why did he have to come out now? Why did that have to happen?
Well, it's funny. I mean, you can hold two things in your head at the same time. He can still be the most pro-labor president in the history of the United States and do this to the rail workers, because there haven't been many pro-labor presidents in the United States in the past. The reason for the timing is that all of the rail unions, there are 12 of them, have now voted on this tentative agreement. I believe 4 out of the 12 have voted against it. That actually represents a majority of the workers, by the way, who are under the contract. And they have now, under the terms of the Railway Labor Act, they have until December 8th to strike or be locked out.
Right.
And we all know, I mean, we can all say this, that a strike would be debilitating. It'd be debilitating for working people, by the way, right?
Yes.
Because the supply chains would be completely cut off. People would have trouble getting medicine, getting food. It would be a real struggle. And Biden obviously didn't want to risk that at all, even though it's the only leverage that these unions who want a better contract have. And, of course, the seeds of this go back to what I mentioned just a second ago, which is the Railway Labor Act of 1926, which was put together sort of in the wake of the Pullman strike and some of these other things to really give transportation employers the upper hand against transportation unions. Because under the terms of that, it really governs labor relations in the railroad industry, in the airline industry, and it prevents strikes. I mean, that's the biggest thing that it does. It prevents the ability for a strike to happen. It creates mediation as a preliminary step. After that, a presidential board that the president actually did put together back in the summer that puts sort of almost like a third-party arbitrator that puts together an agreement. And if that all fails, the ability for Congress to enforce the terms of that PEB, that board agreement that the president put together. And so this has been done before. It was done in 1991, I believe, right before a rail strike right then, and was signed by George H.W. Bush. And it looks like that's what's going to happen now. Congress has said that they're going to, put forward this resolution, pass it, get it signed by the president, and force these rail workers who don't want this contract back on the job.
Yeah, but here's my problem. I come back to this. Did Biden have to come out and ask for this? I mean, this is one of those things. Why do you have to jump into the middle of this? Is this something that he had to do?
Or? I mean, he didn't have to under the terms of the law. He didn't have to come out and say, I request that Congress pass this. The resolution was already out there. It was put together by two Republicans back in the summer.
Of course,
they were trying to force them back on the job. And my belief is that Congress would have passed this anyway, whether Biden said, give it to me or don't give it to me. They would have put it in his lap and said, sign this. So, no, he didn't have to do that. I think the cleaner thing that you can say about Biden is he put together the presidential emergency board that ended up putting an agreement on the table that didn't include the main request of the workers, which is sick days.
Right.
And or included one sick day. Right. And that's the core of the problem. Now, if this was a friendlier agreement, we wouldn't be having this conversation. If it was a more of a fair agreement, but obviously the rail worker unions that decided not to agree to this contract, and it was narrow, by the way. The smart TD, they I think it was like 52-48 or something like that. They voted down the contract. You know, if a better agreement was on the table, they probably would have accepted it. And it wouldn't have even had to be, you know, just basic humanity. Allow someone who's sick to go to the hospital or to go to the doctor without threat of being fired.
Right.
I mean, and that's really all that they were asking for.
Yeah, they weren't asking for weekends. I mean, they weren't asking for what everybody else in the workforce takes for granted. They weren't even asking for that, which is the really amazing part in this.
Absolutely. And so if you want to fault Biden, absolutely fault him for putting together a presidential emergency board that came back with that agreement. Once that agreement is on the table, under this really bad law that should be repealed, that treats transportation workers like no other workers in the economy, under this law, there's no way it's going to get to a strike. I mean, not legally anyway, right? I mean, maybe a wildcat or something, but there's no way legally that you're going to get to a strike because Congress will step in to prevent a supply chain disaster. And whether or not Biden had to say that or not, or request it, it was probably going to happen anyway.
No, it was going to happen anyway. My problem is I've always said that it's not going to go to a strike. And if it is, it's going to be a very short, you know, couple of minutes.
Right.
But that Congress would act. I'm struggling with Biden coming out and taking this position.
Disagree with you, but I have a problem with Congress doing it too. Like, you know, what other industry does Congress get to step in and say, no, you're not allowed to use the only power you have as a worker, which is the ability to collectively say, we are walking off this job, we don't get the terms that we need to continue. No other industry that has that position where Congress can step in and say, no, tough, you're going back to work. So I think that's the core of the problem. And so if you look forward, there has to be some reforms here. Yeah.
The question I have, David, is if Congress has this power that they can impose this contract, don't they have the power to change it? Couldn't they say, look, okay, we're going to make this contract better. Since you two parties can't come to an agreement, we're going to decide that, they get a sick day. They get two sick days. Maybe they get a weekend every other month. Maybe is there nothing they could add to it?
I mean, that's what is interesting, is that you are starting to see some members of Congress come out and say, you know, if we're going to force them back on the job, we should force it back on the job with decent terms. And not just the usual suspects, not just Bernie Sanders. John Hickenlooper, the Democrat from Colorado, who's seen as pretty centrist, came out today and said, you know, we should give several sick days to these rail workers before we force them back on the job with this contract. So it remains to be seen. I assume that the leadership will want to push this through fast without any amendments. But, you know, whether there's enough support for the workers, you know, they need 60 votes in the Senate to get this done. So maybe there is a possibility here. In a larger sense, I think what needs to be done is more regulatory force upon these rail companies, because the only given what we have with Railway Labor Act, the only kind of countervailing force on the rail companies is the Surface Transportation Board. That is the regulator,
right?
The national rail regulator. And Martin Obermann, who I had the opportunity to interview just a few weeks ago, I think has been very aggressive in saying that for too long, rail companies have cut staff, cut capacity at the expense of commerce, at the expense of the workers, and just to make a buck. And he was very forthright about this to me. He was not messing around. He was not reading between the lines in any way. And so more work on the part of the STB to say, No, you have to staff these things properly. You can't put one person on a whole train. You have to, you know, have the capacity available so that you're, you know, you can get goods across.
Yeah.
You have to be regulated. I think that ultimately would end up being a better deal for these workers.
No, I mean, of course, that's the problem. These companies have gotten so large, they've consolidated to the point to where they're monopolistic, right, and they collude. I mean, you know, this is...
And you know, one thing we shouldn't forget here is that there is a proposed merger that has been on the books for a little while that has not been approved yet by the Surface Transportation Board. It's between Canadian Pacific and I believe it's either Norfolk Southern or Kansas City Southern. It's Kansas City Southern and Canadian Pacific. That would bring us from 7 Class 1 railroads to 6. There were 40 in the 1980s. There are now 6, and really there are 4 major ones, and 2 are in the east and 2 are in the west. So you have an effective duopoly across the country. And a lot of times those rail companies don't share routes. So often you only have one choice. And so one thing that the Surface Transportation Board can do is say, no, we're not going to approve this merger, and we're going to keep at least a modicum of competition in this industry. And furthermore, we're going to look into ways in which we, you know, could create even more competition, maybe break you guys up. And that will get the attention of the rail companies. I mean, Wall Street has controlled this industry for far too long. The term that gets used is precision scheduled railroading. And all that means is cut staff, cut capacity, cut everything to the bone, and consolidate so that you can charge the maximum amount of price because you're throttling the capacity yourself. And that's what this industry has been. And so we need to see more force on the regulatory side in addition to better laws around the workers being able to collectively bargain.
I'm right there with you. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with David Day, and he's the executive editor over at the American Prospect. Prospect.org is their website if you want to take a look at the work that they do. Incredible stuff. Now, again, you go back to this regulatory stuff. We just came out of 4 years of the Trump administration, you know, cutting regulations at every turn. And you've got this right-wing fantasy of, you know, job-killing regulations. We got to do away with them all. And this is an example of, you know, an industry that isn't overly regulated, because look at what they get away with. And what that trickle-down effect is, it's basically people who are living to work for that company out of fear that they're going to get fired. If they get sick, if their kids get sick, if they want to take a minute off, there are real problems here.
And they can only do that because they have no choice. You know, it's as much as the shippers have no choice for how they're going to get their goods to market. The workers have no choice. They don't have another rail company that they can jump to. They know that they have to abide by the terms of the rail barons, people like Warren Buffett, who owns BNSF Railroad, the largest one. They have to abide by those terms, or else they're going to have to look for other form of gainful employment. And what's really interesting here is if you listen to the shippers, which are in industries that do not like to be regulated, right, in their own industries, people like the American Chemistry Council or Big Ag or things, they are screaming for regulation in the rail industry, right? I mean, it's not something you expect big business to say, that we need a stronger hand from government so that we can, you know, have a functioning commercial system in the U.S. But that's what they're saying. And that shows you how out of control the rail industry has become.
Now, again, you've brought up a couple of things. I mean, you know, for me, we need major comprehensive labor law reform across the entire board. But the railway, the RLA is right front and center as one of the big ones. Again, you know, coming out of this pandemic, we see consolidation just jacking up prices, and I say causing the majority of the inflation that we're suffering from, and these railroads being part of that. How come we aren't hearing those stories? Tonight, everything is about Biden making this choice. All of the attacks are Democrats are weak on labor, and he's not as pro-union.
Right.
How come we're not talking about these companies who are manipulating a system, and they've got all the power and control? Why isn't that the message?
Well, I mean, sure, this is a new, the media often has this blind spot where they, They only look at what's new, right? What's new and what's now. And what's new is that the Congress and the president are going to force these workers back onto the job. But, you know, behind that is 40 years of an industry that has been really terrible for workers. Over the last 6 years, the rail industry has cut roughly 30% of its workforce.
Yeah.
So, you know, the ones that have remained may be going back to a job that's, you know, pretty crappy and that doesn't have weekends and that doesn't have sick days and things, but they have a job, and 30% of the workforce doesn't anymore. And that's entirely because of this Wall Street mentality of maximize your profits by cutting labor to the bone. And that's the core problem that we have to talk about here.
No, I spend a lot of time in the rail yards because it's part of my job. And you talk to these people, and these trains are getting longer. They're getting much more difficult to manage. And they want to go from, you know, a two-man crew down to a one-man crew eventually. And then eventually they want to get rid of workers altogether and automate the whole damn thing. You go, this message to the broader public, because strikes and in labor, things like this are won and lost, I believe, on public opinion. I think the public opinion is on the side of the workers.
I agree. The problem is the law isn't.
So if there were a lot of wildcat strike, I mean, if these workers said, you know what, we don't care what you say, Congress, we're fighting for this. I know the unions would get slapped with huge fines and all the draconian stuff that would happen to the institutions. But what if the workers just said, you know what, we're done. We're not doing this anymore.
Well, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, certainly we've been down that road. It was before your time and before my time, and it was in, you know, Eugene Debs and the Pullman strike. And we saw what happened then. The National Guard came out and they started to run the railroads, right? So I don't know exactly what would happen if there was some sort of wildcat.
And I don't know that's a bad thing, to be honest. You know, let the National Guard come in. At least there's some consequence for these railroad companies. At this point, there is none. Or am I just too?
The problem is, it's a lot to, as you know, it's a lot to ask of a worker to say that, you know, it's now on you to break the law, to risk prison, to risk everything that you have over this principle. And it may be the right thing to do, but it's easy for me, I guess. It feels like to say, yeah, they should go out on a wildcat strike. I don't have to do it, right? It doesn't affect me in the kind of way that it would affect those workers. So I feel like it's a very personal decision for those workers to take that step.
But you know, I do talk to some of these folks, and the anger is there that they feel that they have nothing. You know, the Republicans hate them because at every turn they're deregulating, they're passing laws to make things worse. And Democrats don't seem to be there willing to fight with and for them. You know, I've said a million times, in a street fight, Democrats will offer to hold your coat. This seems like that kind of a feeling.
It is a shame because, as you've said, this administration and this National Labor Relations Board has been a positive force for labor. I mean, just this week, I believe Amazon was found to have illegally fired workers. There are those kinds of injunctions that have been filed all the time with the Amazon worker movement, with the Starbucks worker movement. With we're seeing all this energy in labor, and some of the rulings that have been passed have really aided that in many ways. And yet, you know, it's kind of like when the rubber meets the road here and the decision needs to be made, the path of least resistance is what's taken. And ultimately that sides with the bosses rather than the workers.
Look, at the end of the day, Biden made the only choice he could make, because you made this point at the beginning, this pain and suffering for everybody else in the working class and people, you know, who need medicine and who need food and all the things that transportation brings. The railroad companies know this, and this is a game of chicken, and they're willing to allow the working class to suffer. The workers are trying to figure out, hey, how do we make our lives better? Because that's what unions are supposed to be doing, making lives better. But when the game's already rigged, this is where, again, I keep coming back to this. You know, I'm not going to beat Biden up too much because I think he's done a lot of good stuff.
But in this, I don't know that I would have played this the same way.
Yeah. I mean, certainly he could have one of the things that you say is that you want to get caught trying, right?
Yep.
In politics. He could have said nothing, or said, you know, I believe that the rail industry needs to give these workers the basic dignity they want. And then when he got the agreement, he could make a big, you know, when he got the bill from Congress that he would inevitably get, probably with a veto-proof majority, he could either say, you're going to have to do that, Congress, I'm not going to sign it, or say, reluctantly, they passed it with a veto-proof majority, I'll sign this, but here are my principles. Instead, he preempted the process by saying, yeah, we need this agreement. And, you know, the fact that he said, I'm a very pro-labor person, but in this case, you know, that I think rubbed people the wrong way.
No, me as well. I mean, I thought for sure there was going to be another cooling off period to get us on the other side of the Christmas holiday. And then this would have been a Republican House that would have had to have done this, which they would have done gleefully. So let me ask you this, because, you know, I'm getting a lot of, to see what Biden did, you know, Trump would have done something different. Would Trump have done anything different?
No, absolutely not. I mean, if anything, the force back to work would have come earlier, probably in advance of a presidential emergency board. They wouldn't have even had a board where they did get a 24% wage increase, I believe.
Yep.
Trump probably would have preempted that whole process and put him right back on the job. And, you know, I mean, we don't have to guess what a Republican administration, even a moderate Republican administration, would have done in the event of a strike that was looming. That's exactly what George H.W. Bush did. He signed the bill and forced everybody back to work. So this was inevitable. I think everybody knew it. And the workers said, look, I'm not going to sign an agreement that I don't want, the ones that held out. If this is going to be imposed on me, let Washington impose it on me. And that's ultimately what happened.
Yeah. Last question I've got for you, because, you know, in looking at it, I had someone who did say, you know, give Joe a chance. And look, I want to give Biden every bit of the benefit of every doubt, because I do think his heart is in the right place. Is there something possibly in the works through the back channels? I mean, do the railroads just know they have the power and there's nothing that anyone can do about it?
When I talked to folks at Atlas Air, which is obviously not a rail company, an airline company, but it's governed under the Railway Labor Act, what they said to me is that management routinely laughed at them because they knew they had the upper hand. They have no ability to use the one thing that gets management's attention, and that's the strike. They knew they can't use it. So it was clear that there was this December 8th deadline, and it just wasn't enough time to hammer out an agreement as much as you know, it's been worked on in the past. And so at that point, I don't think that there was any back channel. There was no attempt to make a better agreement. Especially because, you know, there is a split here, right? I mean, eight unions said yes to this, reluctantly, but they said yes. A little less than half of the workers said that they'd go along with this. The AFL has not put out a statement about this, by the way, because eight of those unions are part of the Federation. So it was a very difficult situation, as you said. And I don't think that Biden thought that there was a way to get anything done other than a congressional resolution.
Yeah.
And he didn't have to ask for it, but he did.
Yeah, no, it's just one of those moments. And look, I had a listener who reached out and said, this is why we have to have a general strike. And I'm going, I wish we were that country. I wish we were the culture that had that kind of solidarity, that, yes, we would all take to the streets and we would all bear the consequences and we would all be willing to suffer what consequences would come out of it. But we're not that society. We're just not.
Yeah, it's true.
That simple. But, David, I appreciate the time. Good stuff as always. Look forward to having you back again real soon.
All right, Rick. Thanks a lot.
Good stuff. Our good friend David Dayan. Make sure you check out the work that he does over at the American Prospect, prospect.org, the website. Going to take a quick break right back here from Atlanta, Georgia. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.